Hour 2 Overdrive continues live from Chicago. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, and TSN 1050's draft coverage is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Test drive the superior performance of a Subaru today.
And we've already gone on a Richard Kimball-type trot around the town, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
A Sykes walk?
I enjoyed our time out there. It is
nice
hot
walk, yeah,
in Chicago.
Shorts, or did you go suit?
We both had long pants on.
Mm-hmm. You would have just been sweating up a storm.
Oh, we were basting. And we went to this tavern for lunch. The worst service
really?
In the Western Hemisphere. How awful was that spot?
We were the only two people in there. Well, there was one other older lady in there. And we couldn't find anybody to do anything for us. They were all playing video games or something in the back.
Useless.
Yeah, millennials.
Yeah.
Lots of millennials in there, actually. Well,
Steph was in Chicago, I guess, her and her friends.
Yeah.
Serving people.
Steph and her friends took over a tavern down on Rush here in Chicago.
Lazy.
But Bob McKenzie and Darren Dreger, Hockey Insiders, will join us around the table here in just a moment. Roberto Luongo later in the hour.
Yeah.
News pouring out in terms of player movement, or potentially players signing. And obviously the big news today, Eberle for Ryan Strome. Eberle going from Edmonton to New York for Ryan Strome. We'll talk about that throughout the afternoon, get into it with the insiders. But a couple of notes that have come out recently. According to the insiders, Brian Boyle and Vegas are talking, or at least Vegas might be showing interest in Brian Boyle. He's going to have a lot of suitors. I'm curious to see where the Leafs come in on that. I would think they'll kick tires. I think they'd be intrigued by the idea of bringing him back. But I don't think they're going to overpay. And I can't imagine they'd give him more than 2 years.
That's the thing. If Vegas goes, we'll give it 3 years at 2.5 or two, then it's just too rich. And plus, it's a position of need. But
what a transition, though, Jamie. The fourth line centerman position back in the day, man.
Yeah.
You could throw anybody out there. You could have a D-man that was a healthy scratch, and you play fourth line centerman, and just don't be embarrassing out there.
Yeah.
Now it's like a
four-line league. It's really a three-line league for sure. If you have a good fourth line that eats up a lot of minutes and generates some chances, that's sometimes the difference.
Well, they're going to play 12, 13 minutes a night. Over 82 games, that's a lot of action, man. That it's not going to necessarily determine your season, clearly, but it can factor into a lot of important games.
Yeah.
So we'll see what ends up with happening with Brian Boyle. But speaking of Vegas, the NHL unveiled the schedule for 2017-2018.
Yes.
The Maple Leafs just happened to be playing their one game in Vegas this year. Sunday afternoon, December 31st.
How many hungover fans are going to be there? Because if you're a Leafs fan, you go in Friday, you fly out Monday. That's it.
Think about that weekend for New Year's. Now, you know where I stand on this, the idea of actually going to a hockey game when you're in Vegas.
So you're not going to go.
It's an afternoon game. I might have a loophole here.
Oh, really? Because there's no pools or tables in Vegas at that time?
I just said, man, around dinner time, that's when I really move and shake on the Strip. But if you're telling me that I'm going to get there around 12:30 local time, I might be able to mix in an afternoon game. Although, if it is an afternoon game and you were out until 5 in the morning, that could be a bit of a spicy meatball. I would have to think that Vegas probably, you know, in an ideal world, reached out to the league and said, can you give us Toronto on a weekend.
Yeah.
Find a way, because you know Hockey Night's going to sit there and say, we don't want them playing in Vegas on a Saturday night.
Right.
So find something else. Either it's a Friday night or a Sunday, and it wouldn't surprise me if Vegas looked at this and said, what are the chances we could get them here New Year's Eve?
Well, I'm sure they didn't specifically ask for Toronto, but I'm sure they said, give us a heater from the Northeast.
Right.
So it can be a destination thing and everybody can come out here.
Yeah.
And so the place will be nuts.
Montreal or Toronto, and it's Toronto.
Or the Rangers or Boston or anybody.
Even Chicago.
Region 06.
Yeah,
yes,
like a big
basically
market with a lot of fans and a lot of money and people that will travel. And you can bank on it, man. If you're a travel agent in Toronto right now, think about the packages you're working on right now, because this was the concern for me, was that the Leafs would play in Vegas on like a Monday night in March.
Right.
And people would be like, I can't get there. I'm working or whatever.
I've got something planned for us, because if we end up going, you go in Friday night, we could do an overdrive.
I'm not going
show
unless I sit beside one of you two.
Okay. I'll let you fly in with me. The Saturday, we do a day party, pool party.
We do a show from the pool party.
A show. Then the Sunday, we have Hangover Heaven come to our room just before we go right to the game. And Hangover Heaven will top up our fluids and get us feeling good so you can have beers at the game.
I like that idea.
That's what I would do.
That's an easy sales pitch.
But that's the type of packages that you're putting together is, you know what, Friday, Saturday could be rough, so you need to drink on the Sunday. You get a little IV in your room. Pay a little extra
for it. If we're not going for work, I might go like for...
vacation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You can fly. You can fly back that Monday morning. I have a...
We're not working that day anyway. Jan 1, nobody's working.
Well, that's true.
Take your time.
Absolutely. Come back on the Tuesday if you want.
I believe I'm working. It's the World Juniors, but... I'll still fly back. I'll still be there.
Right. We'll talk about it as we get closer to the game and we start discussing what else is going on out there. But there is a couple of different games that are sticking out for Leaf fans. One in particular, on December 19th, it's a Tuesday, at 2 p.m.
Are you 100% sure of this? Because I thought it was fake news.
No, I'm pretty sure that this is certain. Now, I'm relying on sources on this.
Right, which is... sources can be questioned. That's my...
The InfoWars of hockey sources when we're talking about actually breaking down these schedules.
But it is...
It sounds like they're going to play December 19th. It's a Tuesday at 2 p.m. against Carolina. And the reason for that is it is going to mark the 100th anniversary of the Maple Leaf organization. The Toronto Arenas played on December 19th, 1917 at 2 p.m. Now, needless to say, they didn't play against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Couldn't they have got the Habs or somebody in there?
But wouldn't you think that's TV, saying I'm not wasting an afternoon midweek game on a premier team? Give me a donkey that...
Hey.
give me a donkey that I can throw on TV at 2 p.m. I don't know how many people will be watching.
2 p.m. Eastern versus Carolina. It's on the schedule.
Yeah, but they'll sell it out. I mean, that's around Christmas time. They'll get 19,000 people in
there. They'll sell it out. I think Carolina's actually going to be a good team this year. I know we're just talking about not a marquee matchup.
You can't sell Carolina, man.
No, but I'm telling you right now, I think Carolina is one of those teams that all of a sudden sneaks up on people like, well, this team's pretty good. It's still not a rivalry. It's still not a ticket, but... Be interesting to see, because you're right, looking at the schedule, 3:30 Eastern game, so that's a 12:30, this is New Year's Eve, 12:30 local time in Vegas.
That is a tough turnaround. If you were out the night before, and why would you not be if you're in Vegas?
When I played in Hartford 2 years in a row, we had 1 o'clock games New Year's Day.
Oh,
yeah,
gross.
In Wash.
How did that go over?
So,
did you pull a Dougie Gilmore?
No.
Were you out the night before?
Do you want a great story?
I'll call it a quasi-Gilmore.
I'll give you a good story. I will not out my team that I was on, but you could probably look it up quickly. The year 2000, Y2K, everyone was worried about planes crashing and computers crashing and that, so we played a New Year's Day game in Washington. New Year's Eve, the game was at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Joel Quenneville goes... guys, you can go out for Y2K. It'll be pretty cool. But he goes, let's be smart. 1:30 curfew. I had a teammate that was out later than that, put it that way.
Didn't make it on time. How'd he play the next day?
Unreal. Unreal.
So guilt.
Guilty as sin. And I saw, outside of his room, empty beer bottles, champagne bottle. This guy was on fire.
Well, as he should, man. As long as he plays well, it doesn't matter.
He was unreal at a 4 o'clock game in Washington, Y2K.
Good man.
We bringing in Frankie Flowers here?
Yeah,
what?
We got the boys in here. The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance at Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie. Who's Frankie Flowers?
Me.
Dregs?
Yeah, because I tweeted a picture earlier. I was bored, right? So I'm on a patio outside the Weston River North. And I look down, and there's a nice little flower garden on the patio, and there's a butterfly and a flower. So I'm like, well, that's a nice picture. So I take the picture, and I tweet it, and O-Dog comes right over the top on a quote tweet and says, muted.
Muted.
Hey, I don't want to see a picture of a butterfly and a flower.
If we do, we're going to follow National Geographic.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good karma. An hour later, we're talking about Jordan Eberle getting traded to New York Islanders.
We finally got something going here, didn't we? Like, what do you guys make of that deal right off the hop? Eberle for Ryan Strome.
Well, look, I mean, it's cost savings, number one. Not suggesting that Ryan Strome isn't going to be a good player for the Oilers, but you know, with contract extensions looming to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and we're talking about mega deals here. We're not talking, you know, minute dollars. We're talking mega millions. So, you know, they've got time to work in that, but, you know, the time is right now. There's four or five teams that were interested, and they feel like Ryan Strome needs to hit the reset button. Eberle needs to hit the reset button, and it's a good fit for both clubs.
Just to backtrack a little bit, we were talking earlier about the dollar values. Like, not everybody's Sidney Crosby that's going to say, give me 8.7, it's a team discount. Like, these two guys could just say, you're paying up, and if they do, there's really no choice.
No question about that, and that's what we've got to wait and see what those numbers are going to be. Now, on the financial pressures, though, they weren't in a position where they had to trade Jordan Eberle right now, because McDavid's money's not going to kick in for another year. Right. Draisaitl's money's going to kick in immediately, but nevertheless, they decided, I think after the playoff he had, I think they just decided, you know what, we know down the road we can't, long-term we can't keep Jordan Eberle. We weren't really happy with him in the playoffs, even though he's been a pretty good player for them and put up some pretty decent numbers for quite some time. But I think they just decided, you know what, this is where if we get the right deal, we're going to move on.
Brian was saying earlier, he thinks that some Edmonton Oilers fans would be thinking, Eberle for Strome, really? After last year, it was Taylor Hall for Larson, which I think people would probably be happy with. But I told him, that's kind of the going rate when you're trying to move a player to move the salary, and it's what people are going to give you, and that's what they got.
Yeah, there's no question that you get a premium for getting cap space or for getting financial relief. You've got to factor it in. And now, you know, some folks that don't think Chris Russell's a great defenseman are not going to be happy, because he's probably going to get a new deal in the very near future and eat up most of what they save on Eberle is probably going to Chris Russell.
Yeah, 4 years, $4 million, roughly. And
I don't think that's egregious, though. No. But, I mean, the analytics guys like to kick this guy in the shins every chance they get.
And the Oilers love him.
But the Flames loved him, too. Yeah. Every team this guy's been on, when I talk to the people that have actually played with him and been on the team and within the organization, like Calgary wanted to bring him back. Like they couldn't work it out. It ended up, but you look at, it's the value that the organization values with Chris Russell, not the analytics guys. And I'm sure they have their own analytics that help him be better players or help the players that he plays with.
It's ridiculous, though, the amount of talk surrounding
I've never seen
guy.
Arguments more.
I've used this analogy before. It's like going to watch The Lord of the Rings and debating what one orc did during the movie. The guy's a fifth defenseman, and we talk about him all the time. Like, who really cares that much?
Change gears for a second. We'll go back to what O was talking about a little bit before. The things I'm fascinated to see, and we'll get a handle on it, if not in days, then weeks probably, is both what's Connor McDavid going to get, and obviously what's Draisaitl going to get, what's Carey Price going to get. So Carey Price and Connor McDavid are in different situations, but they're actually very similar in that they're both a year away from their deals expiring. McDavid's not an unrestricted free agent like Carey Price is. What's that number going to be for Price in Montreal, and how does it help them or hurt them in terms of everything else they're trying to do? Or Pierre LeBrun just tweeted that Radulov's looking for, what were the numbers, Greg?
Six years at $42 million.
Yeah, $42 million over 6 years, and Montreal's not prepared to do that. You know, and the price thing fits into that. So is Price coming in and saying, okay, well, Lundqvist is 8.5, so I'll take 9? Or is Price coming in saying, you know what? I'm taking 11.
Yeah.
I'm taking 12. And the same thing with McDavid.
Yeah.
And to a somewhat lesser degree, Draisaitl. Is it going to be one of these, Sid took 8.7 and, you know, the Kane and Taves are at 10.5? But maybe he's going to come in and say, no, it's, you know what, it's 11, it's 12,
game,
it's 13, it's 14, it's whatever. I just got the Pearson and I just got the Hart, and there's many more where those came from.
I mean, there are whispers that it's going to be $14 million. For Connor McDavid. And, I mean, if that's true, I mean, good on him. Arguably, at that point, he's looked at as the best in the game. But guess who's paying attention to what's happening with the negotiation in Edmonton with Connor McDavid?
Auston Matthews.
Toronto Maple Leafs, because, you know, again, when Matthews comes off his entry-level contract, maybe he's in that territory, in the vicinity of Connor McDavid.
What we should point out, too, though, is we went through this same exercise with Kane and Taves.
Right.
And I remember very specifically reporting, and everybody freaked out, that their initial ask at that time, and keep in mind that was many years ago, their initial ask was $12 million. And everybody went crazy. can never do 12 million. That maybe that's the first ask. It's all part of a negotiation. Right. But they ended up at 10.5, which is considerably more than the 8.7 that Crosby and whatever Malkin's getting in terms of the way that the Penguins structured it. But Carey Price knows, and Connor McDavid knows, that for every dollar they take over 9 or 9.5 or 10 or 10.5, it becomes very, very difficult for their team in a salary cap world, especially in a flat cap or modest gains like we've been getting, to surround yourself with the kind of players you need to win.
Well, we got into this conversation earlier, the contracts, and we're talking about McDavid and how McDavid, he could ask for the world. I think Matthews will ask for the same amount. That doesn't mean he will get it, but to your point, Crosby took 8.7, Taves got 10.5. And in Chicago, the Sidney Crosby is Taves. And he said, I want to get paid like I'm your number one guy. I think Matthews will ask for the same number. I don't know if he'll get the same number. But it also stumbled into another conversation that we had. Maybe we're focusing on, in Toronto, the wrong comparisons, where we're looking at Matthews versus McDavid. What I'm curious about is, what if Marner looks at Matthews and says, I'm as good of a player as he is. Look at the points I put up. Look at the numbers I think I'm going to project to be. Patrick Kane got the same as Taves. I want the same as Matthews. What ends up happening in Toronto if Marner and Nylander are looking at this too and saying, I'm not taking $4 million less a year than Matthews?
I don't say this often, but that is very well thought out.
It is.
Thank you. Bobby, Dregs.
No, it's true.
It's 100% true, but that's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Absolutely. They're talents.
And then that's sometimes where, and especially if you're Lou, you might be able to take one guy and give him the 7 or 8 year treatment or a 5 year deal if you go that route, the way Stamkos did and some other players. But you might have to take a harder line with other guys and do bridges and that's where you get into the
danger. Just bump a few off to Robidoux Island and you'll be okay.
The danger of a bridge, too, is, P.K. Subban got a bridge. And
right.
Then
he got paid.
And then was a Norris Trophy winner and with Arbrights and the owner ended up 9.5. So that'll be fascinating, but... I'll be really curious to see how the whole Edmonton situation shakes out. Like, if I'm Connor McDavid, I'm not doing my deal until I see what Draisaitl gets. Because
vice versa,
I suppose. Yeah, right. In that, but if I'm McDavid, you're the Hart Trophy winner. You're the big guy. So if someone's asking me to take a hometown discount, I want to make sure that my hometown discount isn't going to somebody else's salary who's not taken a hometown discount. So in other words, if Draisaitl hits it out of the park and McDavid and they end up really close to each other, maybe if you're McDavid, you're saying, man, I'm not going to do
that.
Well,
and I think that's why the preference from Edmonton's perspective is to get them both done at the same time. But we're forgetting another piece of this puzzle, and that's Cam Talbot. If he continues to develop and play as well as he played this year, you can talk about him as being what? Top three, top five goalie in the planet.
Top five for sure.
What does that guy get paid?
Yeah. Well, a lot of money.
It's endless.
These hockey players are just greedy. There's just no other way around it.
Darren Dreger, Bob.
And the salary cap, it's a killer, man.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, these guys are. And the funny thing is, like, what Connor McDavid is worth to the Edmonton Oilers, it's not even close to what he's going to get.
Yeah.
At $14 million is a bargain in terms of what he means
for sure
to driving the economies of the Edmonton Oilers. But a salary cap system forces everybody to
cut
an appendage or two off to help your brother.
Right. Like Tom Brady should be making $100 million a year. LeBron should be making $200 million. It just doesn't work that way. Bob McKenzie, Darren Dreger joining us. We're live in Chicago ahead of the NHL draft tomorrow night. Leaf fans are curious to see where their team goes in terms of the trade market. Some rumors out there, Colin Miller out of Boston, who's now in Vegas, could be a part of their radar. Maybe with the Trevor Van Riemsdyk trade to Carolina. Carolina looking to potentially move a young defenseman. What are you guys hearing in terms of the Leafs and what they're circling right now?
Well, a couple of things, and maybe this will be perceived as shooting both of those down. But Pierre LeBrun reported today that Carolina seems to be in the mode where they're saying, you know what? We're happy with our 7D, and we may not trade anybody, even though for a while everybody's assumed that we're going to, and that we'll use. They've got lots and lots and lots of draft picks over the next number of years here, and that they are more predisposed to use draft picks to get help up front than they are their defensemen. So that's number one. Number two, the Colin Miller deal. I mean, Colin Miller played in Sault Ste. Marie, Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe, well aware of this player and the type of player that he is. He's got good numbers. He plays a skating puck possession game. So people say, well, that's perfect. You put those two things together. He was available in the draft. Vegas is going to flip him. Perfect fit for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Maybe is. And maybe the deal gets done. But I can tell you this. My best information is that over the last number of weeks, this has not been something that's been on the radar of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So if it gets done, it's going to be, I think, a rather new development. And it also suggests to me that it may not get done at all. It may not even be a consideration. And that just because a guy played for yeah. Dubas and Keith and Junior and he's got some nice numbers, that it doesn't necessarily translate to he's going to be a Leaf. It looks good when we media people all get around, and I'm as guilty of it as the next guy, but my best understanding is that this is not something the Leafs have been focused on or talked about prior to now.
It feels like the wheel has to turn a little bit in terms of the trades that could happen, you know, throughout the course of today, obviously tomorrow and the weekend here in Chicago at the draft. You know, the New York Islanders made that splash with Jordan Eberle earlier today. You know, there's still tons of interest in Travis Hamonic. If that piece gets moved, maybe that frees something up. You know, what's Colorado doing with Matt Duchene? If they get a defenseman back for Duchene the next couple of days, do they move Tyson Barrie? What's Minnesota doing with all of their defense? So maybe one or two of those guys goes, and it changes the outlook.
What is it about the draft floor that kind of stirs things up? It's like these guys are so private, they want to break their own information, and in front of the hockey world, for some That's reason, awesome. They just like to get together and have little chats here and there, and they you guys know it's yeah.
That's why it's one of the favorite days of the year, because it's the hockey version of a political convention. And, you know, in those political conventions, when they're trying to elect a new leader and for a party or whatever, and then, you know, one guy's dropping out of the race and he's going to throw a support. So now there's negotiations going on the floor, and you can see this happening, and all the delegates are looking, and it's just like the fans and the media. So it's fun, and you're absolutely right. Everything's done behind closed doors all year, and then you get out here, and it's like, oh, okay, let's see who's talking to who.
Perfect opportunity, to do the Gary Bettman impersonation.
We have a trade to announce.
You're going to want
to
hear this.
He's going to throw one.
We have a 0% bet,
he's not
bet that
over
he's
here.
Rolling through our show.
Really?
Yeah.
He's dusted us off every year. Winnipeg,
he declines every year.
He goes through every other TSN radio station. He gets to us and goes, no dice.
See, I think you should get Bobby back to put his weight behind it.
All right.
It's all in the request.
Yeah, Bobby, throw it on Twitter.
Sorry, I don't broker deals. Unless I get a cut of the action.
Yeah, we can work something out, believe me. All right, boys.
I'm lucky. I'm happy just to be here. I didn't get much sleep last night. I was a little cranky. I was going to be like O today and just not say anything.
just gonna
do the old mic drop like...
Oh, you missed a doozy of one yesterday during Jerry's percentages.
What do you call it when O zones out?
Baby monkey. Just sitting there.
I was literally Mars. And he asked me a question. I looked at him. And I was like, what?
And Hayes didn't let him off the hook. He said,
hang on. Do you have it back there, Steph, to play it? Bobby doesn't have a headset on.
Yeah, he got him to answer the question he already answered before in the Jerry's percentage.
Yeah. This guy was on a completely different wavelength than everyone else.
It was
on
the great. It ended so the segment.
Yeah,
so
did.
You're saying my scouting report was good.
That's
he
right.
He went AWOL for a full segment.
Focus. I can't focus for more than 10 minutes at a time.
He was horse bleep out of left field.
Yeah.
It was horse bleep.
That's 2 days early.
Yeah,
saves
that's
that
right.
Friday.
He is, however, now, though, a physical specimen.
That's right, man. Look at this
there
guy.
There you go.
Feeling good, looking better. All right, boys, we appreciate you guys popping by. We'll see you tonight and hopefully tomorrow as well.
Sounds great. Thanks,
guys.
The
Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance and Monthly Payment Plans for Big Dreams and Everyday Budgets. Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie joining us around the table. Roberto Luongo checks in next. We are live in Chicago ahead of the NHL draft tomorrow night. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Roberto Luongo, the Florida Panthers, will join us here in just a moment. Draft going on tomorrow night.
We should have got a deep dish delivered, or would that have buried us?
That would have ended our night, man. I'm telling you, this thing is like a bomb that explodes in your barrel. It's worth every bite, but it ends you. You cannot possibly have plans beyond that.
We both fell asleep on you almost on air after a
Swiss
chalet at 5 o'clock. Like this would put us into a coma.
I'm telling you, man. Have you ever had it? I don't think you've had it. Man.
I've had it.
You've had thin crust.
Yeah.
Well, expand your horizons, because I'm telling you, you're going to like it. It's unbelievable, but it is so heavy.
It's like a 3-finger pour drink. Like the crust is...
What other drink is there?
That's true. A Ron Burgundy drink.
That's the amateur move of amateur moves, though, is thinking that you need to load up on like carbs and bread because you got a big night coming up. It totally ruins everything because you just get drowsy and tired and lose everything that maybe was pushing you in the right direction. But we're live in Chicago, and I would assume that Chicago's going to try to make some noise tomorrow night.
Yep.
They're one of the best teams in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about where they're at over the next couple of days in terms of them moving in the right direction. They got swept in the first round.
Yeah.
Like, that was a smack that Nashville handed them. Now, Pekka Rinne played great, but a smack is a smack. And we'll discuss whether or not they're still moving in that championship contention direction.
They got a lot of work to do, man. Horses done now. They got a lot of pieces that have moved out.
Yep.
And it was not good in the playoffs. And Stan Bowman came out and said, I'm not happy about this, this and that. But at the end of the day, that roster is not even close. Right. Obviously, there's still Taves
and Kane.
Yeah, whatever. But it's not close.
Well, Florida's in kind of a similar situation. 2 years ago, they were in the playoffs. This past year, they missed out. And the hope is that they'll get back on track. They got Chris Pronger kicking around now. And joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is from the Florida Panthers, friend of the show, but we haven't caught up with him in a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Your boy, your former tandem down in Florida. Here is Roberto Luongo. What's happening, Roberto?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing pretty well. Draft week, I mean, you were a top 5 pick. Take us back to that experience for you. How nervous were you leading up to the draft?
Oh, it was crazy. My draft was in Pittsburgh. I think it was 1997, if I'm not mistaken. So, I was just the nerves. You know, I wasn't sure where I was going. Luckily, you know, I didn't have to wait too long. So, you know, it felt like forever to get your name called. But after that, the day was a blur. But you know, obviously a day that you always remember. I mean, that's pretty much your dream coming true as a kid. So it was a great moment.
How often do Maple Leaf fans remind you that you were drafted with a Maple Leaf pick?
Oh, not often. Actually, I didn't even kind of forgot about it now that you mention it. Funny to know.
Well, that was the Wendell Clark trade, Wendell coming back, and obviously Leaf fans were ecstatic about Wendell, but now you look back on it and you're thinking, wait a minute, maybe Roberto Luongo could have been a Leaf for the past 20 years.
Well, who was the goalie there at the time? Maybe you guys didn't need a goalie, it would have passed.
I think they probably could have used
Probably could have used you, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But, so leading up to the draft, was there a time where you had multiple meetings with organizations? Were they doing that back then? I know with me, I had meetings with a lot of different organizations. I couldn't figure out who liked me and who didn't. Were you in the same boat?
Yeah, I think if I recall correctly, I probably had like 4 or 5 meetings. Obviously, the Islanders were one of them. I think I met with Boston. There's a few. I think Boston had the first pick that year, if I'm not mistaken. They took Joe. I met with a few teams, and then it was, you know, obviously nerve-wracking because you walk in and they're sitting in the boardroom, and you know you're intimidated, right? You're just 18 years old, and you want to make a good impression. And back in the day, I was a bit more quiet, a bit more reserved, so it was not something that I was very comfortable with. But you know, I tried to be myself and give them some good answers, and I think it all worked out well in the end.
I think we're all kind of nervous and shy during these interviews, Roberto. What do you kind of see? Do you see any difference in these young kids these days? They seem pretty confident and sure of themselves, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think times have changed a lot, you know, from when I was a kid. Even not necessarily the draft, but, you know, when you see rookies coming up playing in their first year, you know, in the league with the boys. I mean, I didn't talk for my first 4 or 5 years before I felt comfortable saying anything in the locker room. But, you know, nowadays...
To.
Yeah, no, exactly. You have to raise your hand if you wanted to ask a question. Like a fool. But nowadays, you know, they come in and they're just like a regular, you know, regular guy. And we joke around a lot, the older guys, with, you know, some of the younger guys that act like they, you know, they've been around, like they've played 1,000 games before. So it's pretty funny to see some of them come up. But, in the most part, they're all good guys. It's just a matter of, you know, things have changed so much that it's not what it used to be.
We're chatting with Roberto Luongo of the Florida Panthers. We're live in Chicago ahead of the NHL draft tomorrow night. With that being the case, as you said, the first 4 or 5 years into the league, you didn't even speak because you didn't feel comfortable speaking amongst the veterans. Take us back to that time in your career. If I had told you at some point you're going to be the captain of a team, how would you have responded?
Well, I wouldn't have believed you. I think, it's not something you see in general, but... I know in retrospect, a lot of people saw it as something that was didn't turn out great or very well. But I tell you what, I enjoyed it. I thought it was an awesome experience for me to do that, and I don't regret it at all. I think it was something that not many people say they can do, and to me, it was a great experience, and I enjoyed it, even though. In the end, we kind of gave it back to Henrik and gave it to Henrik, I should say, and decided to focus more on the goaltending side of things.
I find that the interactions between goaltenders and refs can be some of the best material going. And I would guess that the refs probably allow you guys to get away with more because you're such a unique position. But how did your interactions with the refs maybe change or get affected by the captaincy? Did you feel like you had to be more diplomatic or fight for your teammates more and be less focused on your own situation?
No, not really. I think the assistants were really taking care of that stuff more on the ice. I mean, once I was on the ice, I was a goalie, and that was it. I mean, the toughest part of my job was the ceremonial puck drops. I had trouble winning those draws. But other than that, I mean, when I was on the ice, I was just playing goal. I was really focused on talking to the refs or whatnot. And that was more the assistants that would come in and help me out with that kind of stuff.
You look at this year, a lot of polarizing plays in the playoffs as far as goaltender interference and offside. And you lived through it this season. What do you make of some of those rule changes and tweaks by the league? And as a player, were you focused on it, especially as a goaltender? You're trying to fight for position. You get bumped, and you don't want to sell something, but you're seeing some guys sell it and get it called back. Like, as a goaltender, what are you thinking right now as far as some of the rules that are implemented?
Yeah, I mean, as far as goaltending interference goes, that's tough, man. I don't, it's hard for the refs. The game happens so quickly. It's tough for them to see exactly what happens on the play without actually seeing a review. So it's a tough call. I mean, it could go either way. Most nights you're not sure exactly how it's going to go. I know we got burned by it a few times during the season that cost us a couple goals, but. I think at the end of the day, we need to, whatever the rule is, it doesn't matter. I think everybody needs to be on the same page and have a better understanding of what is and what isn't. I think if everybody knows clear cut what it is, I think it'll help everybody, the goalies and the forwards. As far as the offside rule review, I'm not a big fan of it. I think especially, if the guy offside has nothing to do with the play or the goal or whatnot, I don't think it's really helpful to the game, especially, when you're trying to create goals, not take them away. So, I wish there was a better way to find a solution where, even if the play was outside by a millimeter or whatever, if the player involved is not really involved in the play, it's not worth it to review it. But I don't know. I mean, that's not my job at this point, but obviously I think a lot of people were a little bit turned off by the offside reviews.
Roberto, can you take us back in time and give us one nugget that Noodles taught you to make you the goaltender you are today? Just one thing. He had to have given you something.
I got the perfect. This is how to hide the hot dog in the glove when you're not playing on the bench.
That's a legacy.
Yeah, that's it. There's a legend right there.
I just remember having to come in. I think you got a shot in the collarbone one time, and Sean Hill brought me onto the ice, and I still had your towel tucked into my left pad, and I forgot about it. And during the play, it popped out, and Sean Hill had it on the end of his stick and threw it over the board. So,
like, have you ever had a guy like Roberto Luongo come up to you on the bench and say, like, how are you feeling tonight? And you just flat out looked at him and said, don't even think about it?
Well, no, because that's a funny story. Funny story. I think it was after Noodles left. James Shields was my backup, and it was the end of the year. We were out of the playoffs. Like, guys just wanted to go home. And I took out like a hard slap shot in my glove, and I was hurting. Like, I didn't know if he wasn't going in. He wasn't going in no matter what. So he was like, just go back in there, you're fine.
Well, what about the reverse, though? The 65-game starter who gets a night off and the backup gets hurt.
That's so greasy.
That happens to me all the time for some reason. Like, you know, I enjoy my nights off, and then for some reason or another, like,
the backup
happened with Monty a couple of years ago. He got hurt a bunch of times. Rhymes again this year, once or twice. Like, it's and when I'm not playing, I'm not playing. Like, I don't get ready mentally. Like, a night off is a night off. So
you may not even have your gear on.
Yeah, well, half of my gear's in the locker room, so I'm like, I don't have my cup on. I'm like, oh, I got to get in there now. It's like.
That's got to be such a cool experience, though. If you know you're not playing and you're just chilling out, like, it's a great town. It's
just checked out.
Man, I would mail that in. I can only imagine what that experience would be like.
No, I know. It's not fun when the goalie lets in one or two early in the game, because then you're like, oh, no. Like, you start getting, like, nervous. Like, you don't know what's going on. You keep looking at the coach, right, to make sure. If you're looking at me, you try not to make eye contact. You're looking on the floor. Like,
I would be looking back at the coach and just saying, don't even think about it.
Like, give the coach the finger.
I'm not going in. We're chatting with Roberto Luongo of the Florida Panthers. We're live in Chicago at the NHL Draft.
Have you had any contact with Bobby Bugner coming in?
I haven't met with him yet. I think he was here for when he got introduced, and he headed back out. I think he's going to be here next week when we have a development camp. So I'm going to head down there and maybe go for a few skates. See how everything feels, and I'm sure I'll have a chance to chat.
How are you feeling? A lot of people obviously looking forward to seeing you get back in there on a regular basis. Injury problems a year ago. How do you feel about this upcoming season?
Yeah, I feel good. I think it was a tough year. You know, after the surgery, I felt well for pretty good for the most part of the year, and then seems that some problems started happening after the holidays, and it just kept getting worse, and got to the point where I couldn't play through it. So I've been pretty much rehabbing since early March, and it's been about three, four weeks now that I've been symptom free, which is fun. And I'm excited to get back on the ice and do my thing. I mean, that's what it's all about.
We're looking forward to it. We always appreciate you taking time for us, and enjoy the rest of the off season. I'm sure we'll bug you again down the road.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure, guys.
There he is, Roberto Luongo, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Yeah, that's a trade, though, like the Leaf connection that doesn't get up a lot.
You brought that up earlier. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, well, because there's been so many others. Like, everyone looks at the Niedermeyer.
Tuukka Rask,
exactly. But that was bringing Wendell back, which was huge. I mean, it was Wendell Clark. The guy was a legend, and people were excited about it. But it turned out to be the fourth overall pick, and they picked Roberto Luongo, who's more than likely going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And they made the deal, and obviously it didn't really work out the way they were hoping it would.
Yeah.
And again, we talked about this off the top. If you're a Leaf fan, bask in whatever we're dealing with these days, because, man, it is a completely different organization with a completely different reputation, and it feels like they're going to make the right move.
Yeah.
It's just a totally different mentality.
There's some trust there.
Totally different mentality.
Trust in some smart people that are just – things in the past just would not have happened. They won't happen.
No.
Obviously, there's going to be some things going in the future that don't work out, maybe a signing, a trade.
Yeah.
But as of right now, they're hitting on everything, and you can't expect that to continue. But they're smart people. They're going to go with the percentages and just common sense.
And if they make one mistake, you can't – I mean, you're going to have to give them some reprieve. They've – so far in the first 2 years, there hasn't really been – any misses, or maybe one or two misses here or there. I mean, Robidoux technically was a miss.
But Nonis was still here for that.
Right.
And
if you had a town hall meeting right now, not one person would stand up and criticize that organization.
Probably not.
There would be one. You know what it would be? Why isn't Austin Matthews the captain?
Right.
Be some jackass stand up and say that.
Well, you know who it could be?
Joe from the Bridge.
It's Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I saw that. That's why I brought it up.
McDavid spoke with Trakos, I think it was in Vegas, and he said he's going to be the guy anyway. Why waste time? Throw the C on his jersey.
You know why? It's because it's Lou and the group. It's them making sure that he's ready for the whole picture. Did you see him last night? I agree.
This kid is not going to be affected by anything.
I agree.
If he were the captain on opening night in Winnipeg next season, I don't think it changes anything.
Nobody would flinch, but I still want to see him go through where he has to do walk-offs and all that. Just go through the annoying stuff that come with that. Mm-hmm. That letter.
Right. It is a different universe you're in, for sure.
I think he'll be great at it. He's a leader. He's a born leader. But what's the rush? He's the captain right now.
I guess it is the McDavid trajectory, right?
Yeah,
McDavid made the impact as a rookie, first overall captain, and then look what he's done.
Right.
And so trying to connect the dots.
Yeah.
James Patrick will join us. He's the uncle of Nolan Patrick, who's expected to go in the top two or top three tomorrow night. He'll join us around the table in the next hour. I've got some future bets that we're either going to buy or sell based on the awards last night. We'll get to that as well in the next hour. Overdrive continues. We're live in Chicago ahead of the NHL draft. TSN 1050. We are live in Chicago ahead of the NHL draft tomorrow night. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Couple of deals happening today. Jordan Eberle going from Edmonton to the Islanders, straight up for Ryan Strom. Trevor Van Riemsdyk going from Vegas to Carolina for a pick. And as for the Leafs, I mean, they're always connected to different rumors and they're connected to different players. Now there are some rumors out there that maybe they're showing interest in Nate Schmidt, who was with the Capitals and got claimed by Vegas last night.
Really good skater.
Good defenseman. Played well in that series against the Leafs.
Yes, very good skater. Like, that's a guy that when Shattenkirk was struggling, they inserted him and he didn't come out. Like, that would be an upgrade. I mean, to me, he seems like, and I would have to, like, dig around a little bit more, like a younger Hunwick. Like, you know, Hunwick's a really good skater and strong on his skates, but I think more upside offensively, handles the puck better.
I think what is pretty evident, and the Leafs are not alone in this, the whole league is saying we need skaters on the back end.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have the most skill, okay, we can live with that. If you're not the most physical guy in the world, okay, we can live with that.
Yeah.
But if you can't skate, I'm not sure we can live with it.
Nobody can live with that anymore. You just can't.
Yeah. And that's why I think the Leafs are probably thinking, okay, we're not getting Doughty, Burns, Carlson. Like, it's not happening. People will tweet in and text into the show every once in a while and say, enough about Nate Schmidt. They got to go get Doughty. It's not going to happen, okay?
Right.
But can you improve yourself with pieces here or there over the next couple of years?
Yep.
Yes, you can. It may not be a grand slam. In fact, it more than likely won't be a grand slam. But if you can get better incrementally and become a defense core that skates well, that has some skill, that can get the puck out and move the puck up to a very talented forward group, you're in a good spot.
Right.
And I think that's what the Leafs are hoping to do right now.
Yep.
So
I agree.
We'll see what happens over the next 48 hours and certainly over the next couple of weeks. NHL draft going tomorrow night. Nico versus Nolan. We're not sure who's going to go first overall. Could be Nolan Patrick. His uncle's going to join us around the table. I'm assuming you know him, Noodles. You know everybody somehow.
I know him. We're friendly.
Okay. So James Patrick, he played over 1,200 games in the NHL. Ninth overall pick. So his nephew might actually boost him out of the highest pick in the family here. We'll get him around the table. He's now the head coach out in Kootenay. We'll get his take on the draft tomorrow night, what's going on around the NHL. And I've got some future bets that we're either going to buy or sell.
I am so jacked up for that.
We are bringing the heat. We're live in Chicago, Illinois. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.